Hello and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast, Protecting Your Car, Increasing Auto Software Security. I'm Kurt Schwader, your moderator, with today's speakers Andreas Dharmawan from Electric Cloud, Art Dannard from Clockwork, who was recently acquired by Roguewave, and Dr. William White from Security Innovation. Today's schedule consists of about 50 minutes of presentation material, leaving 10 minutes at the end of the hour for audience Q&A. Before we begin, I'd like to run down some features of your viewing console. First is the Enlarge Slides button. This button will maximize the slides to fill your entire screen. The Download Slides button allows you to download and print the slides if you'd like a hard copy to follow along with. The button labeled Forward to a Friend enables you to send an email to someone that will include a registration link to this eCast so they can also attend. The Ask a Question text box enables you to participate in today's event. You can simply type your question into the box and submit it using the Submit button. You can submit questions at any time during the presentations. We encourage you to do so early and often while you're looking at the material and the question is fresh in your mind. We'll address as many of these as we can during the closing Q&A. And if you have a question pertaining to the eCast operation itself, you could submit those too. And one of our technicians will be happy to respond to you during the eCast. Andreas Dharmawan is our first presenter. He is a Senior Director of Solutions and Services with Electric Cloud. Andreas has 20 years of software experience in the industry and has led the charge in developing customers to adopt agile and continuous delivery technologies. Currently, in addition to leading the global technical field operation, he focuses on solution development for agile and continuous delivery in mobile and automotive verticals. Automotive is Andreas' passion. He is the president of the Audi Club of North America. He also writes driving experience articles in automotive and travel online publications. Andreas, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Kurt. Thank you, everyone, for your time and interest today in accelerating delivery of high-quality and secured automotive software. Automotive industry has transformed from hardware-based supply chain to hardware with embedded software and services supply chain. Car manufacturer must update firmwares several times a year instead of once every few years. Today, Tesla Motors does the firmware updates over the air surface. Many will follow. The need to update frequently forces supply chain partners to deliver software updates and revision faster. But they have to maintain quality and comply with regulation at the same time. Is it possible for automotive supply chain partners to develop software fast or even faster without sacrificing quality and security? The answer is yes. Technologies are available to accelerate software delivery and the methodology has been proven to produce tremendous benefits. How do we accelerate software delivery in automotive industry? Through orchestration of hundreds of tools found in automotive tool chain. Additionally, each step in the orchestrated workflow can be further accelerated by sending the job to pooled resources. Through parallelization, each step is completed in a fraction of the original time. Because all of the tools are orchestrated, managed, and monitored, the data for compliance is practically available in real time. A compliance data can be generated automatically on demand. We can make the tedious quality and security process disappear into the background so people do not have to rely on an error-prone manual checklist and people do not take shortcuts during the time crunch. Here are examples of the headlines that we do not want to be associated. If we just accelerate software delivery without using the correct methodology and technologies, product and security flaws are introduced intentionally and frequently. When we dig to the next level of details, we learn the following common challenges in automotive industry. slow build, slow test, and slow release process, tedious standard and regulation, complex integration involving many suppliers, complex build, test, and release metrics. An example of a complex release matrix is an infotainment system, software system for a car, is designed for many different car models or even car brands. The same software must be packaged differently to have a different set of features or skin for different car models. And the challenges on the left translate to the obvious negative business impact: slow time to market, poor quality, poor team productivity, increasing costs, and product and security flaws are introduced intentionally due to time crunch. And you always hear it from the team that we don't have enough time to test, or we don't have enough time to perform audit for compliance. Here is an example of how we can accelerate software delivery without sacrificing quality and security. To deliver hardware component with embedded software, we have to use potentially hundreds of software tools and test beds. We cannot just replace them with a single tool because each of them has a unique set of capabilities, purposes, and strengths. And many of these tools are operated by different engineers with different roles. Today, an engineer must be involved in any transition between many of these tools. He must process logs and output from a set of tools and process the information in his mind. Then he creates a new set of data to be used as input to the next tool in the chain. This process is manual, time-consuming, and error-prone. When we orchestrate all of these tools into one continuous pipeline, which can be composed of multiple workflow, we increase the velocity of the whole end-to-end process. Additionally, most embedded software is written in C and C++. We can easily accelerate the build time, for example, from 6 hours to less than 30 minutes through parallelization, sending the build task not only to one multi-core machine, but many multi-core machines. But if we just accelerate the build, we are just shifting the bottleneck to the next phase. So we also need to accelerate the test and release phases through parallelization. When we pool resources, this can be private, hosted, or public cloud, it is important that we are not adding IT overhead in managing all the virtual machine. So automatic management and coordination of workflow execution and resource management are paramount to ensure high resource utilization. We are able to increase the resource utilization from a typical 50% to over 90%, especially for organizations that have many teams in multiple time zones. If you look at the bottom of this page, these are just a few sample of tools that we have orchestrated to create one continuous delivery pipeline. And as you can see, many of these tools are found in automotive industry as well. This is a typical V model in automotive. If you look at the highlighted green areas, this is where our technology, our solution is applicable. This is where the build and test release acceleration benefit are perceived in the V model. As we discussed earlier, because each tool execution is orchestrated, managed, and monitored, we automatically gather the information regarding input, output, person who initiate the step, time of execution, error, warning, and many other properties. This data is available in almost real time, so compliance data can be generated at any stages. By taking this approach, we are meeting SPICE Level 3. After several project completion, the system will have enough historical data and metrics to predict the execution of the next project. Hence, we are achieving SPICE Level 4. For safety compliance, we accelerate static analysis execution, agnostic of the static analysis tool, through parallelization, test recovery, and resource management. Later today, our partner Clockwork will share some of their best technologies. Quickly, here are some of the benefits experienced by our customer through build, test, and release process acceleration. As you can see here, the benefit and the impact to productivity is tremendous. In summary, accelerating software delivery and maintaining high quality and security in automotive industry has been proven possible. We can accelerate end-to-end process by eliminating manual, time-consuming, error-prone transition of hundreds of tools and distributing the execution of each step to pooled resources without incurring IT overhead. As a byproduct of the end-to-end orchestration, compliance and reporting are available immediately and on demand. The real-time data on the project progress can be used to measure the project health and how the project is tracking against the original schedule. Tedious security and quality processes disappear into the background. No more error-prone manual checklists and no more shortcuts. The technical advantages above translate to the positive business outcome, which is fast time to market, high quality and high security, increased productivity and resource utilization, and also reduce costs. Thank you. Kurt?
Very good. Thank you, Andreas. Our next speaker is Art Dannert. He is a distinguished software security engineer with Clockwork, who was recently acquired by Roguewave. He has over 17 years of security experience within the development process. Before joining Clockwork, Art performed numerous application security assessments while working with TrustWave, Spider Labs, Symantec, Overwatch, Lumberjay, and BMC Software. Art.
Thank you. I want to cover first what's going on currently in the automotive space. There's many different software hacks going on. In the past, before we put a lot of software into our cars, we called these guys who perform these hacks hot rodders. They would beef up the engine and transmission and other parts of the car to make it go faster and louder and many other things handle better. Nowadays, that everything is written in software, they can still do these things, though they do it through ways in the code. But they also have side effects to this. In fact, if there's problems with that code, you'll get some unintended side effects, including, as you'll see here, some that are very well known, such as BMW's issues and Toyota's and Honda's, as well as Tesla just recently show that they were vulnerable to some security problems. Now, for the most part, this is all right, except for when they come to safety issues or when you come to issues of the general public not seeing your vehicle as safe or as functional as it should be. You can get into a lot of trouble. So one of the things that I'd like to make sure is well understood is that there's a fine line you have to walk here. One, you have to make sure that your product is available from a source code point of view, and you have to make sure that it's also safe and secure. Because for the next foreseeable future, we're going in this direction, connecting cars. We can already see this today with adaptive cruise control and lane departure technology, as well as infrared highlight light bulbs, and you know, you'll have vision systems on your cars soon enough, GPSs and that sort of thing. The thing to keep in mind here is that software is more and more running your vehicle, and those systems will have to talk to each other. And this is where it's the most important, is that making sure that these systems are safe as possible, because you're traveling down the road at 70 miles an hour, you want to make sure that your cruise control is making the right decisions. Recently, and this is in the last week or so, there's been a video on YouTube that actually indicated from a certain model of Mercedes that all you need is a soda can and their latest adaptive cruise control, and you can actually leave the driver's seat and the car will still go down the road. It's a very compelling and interesting view into the next steps as we get to our connected car future, of how scary it might be to go down the road with no driver behind the wheel. And all that was used was this can of soda that was basically driving the car. So eventually we'll get past that, and we'll get to the point where all cars, and it'll be the weird or strange to have a vehicle with an actual driver. But we're not there yet. And to get to that spot, we have to go through this phase of software that may not be as perfect as we'd like. So what does this really mean? It means that there's millions of lines of code talking on dozens of processors with multiple cores over many systems and networks within your car. Some of these, you have to keep in mind, took years and years to build within the supply chain and have been around for years depending on the make and model. So the code may not be as robust or go through the processes that we currently have today. So we have to make sure that we're starting to design for the future, that we're actually implementing tools of today and that they move towards the future. Because importantly, vulnerabilities last for years. Think of how long you keep your car. Cars last, to be honest, I have a car from 1997. So any problems or design flaws within that car, including the computers, are still there. So any cars that you build today are going to still be around, potentially by your customers, for the next, now, 16 years. So, and we also need to address the fact that it might be difficult to upgrade them. So if you're selling a pickup truck to someone who lives in the far reaches of the Yukon, they may not be able to get to a dealership in a timely manner. So they may be susceptible to crashes of the system and leave that customer stranded. So it's important to keep in mind how important software plays, you know, from now into the foreseeable future. So what this really means is that since we have so much technology in the car, that we need to make sure we have a way of handling all of it. That means automation. Nobody can look at every single line of code and say with certainty that there's a successful or a non-safety issue within that piece of code. So we need to have tools that actually do that. And it needs to be automated, it needs to be fast. And then we need to be able to take that and turn around and say, yes, this tool is certified to find these kind of issues, and therefore I certify that with this standard we actually can have some level of safety or security. So in this terms, just to keep in mind, is that if your code is not secure, it could be very unsafe. So here's some of the problems that actually that I want to expand upon. So it was mentioned earlier in the presentation is how do we update a particular software module? Well, we're going to have to do it as conveniently as possible because there's still millions of cars on the road and you can't have them all updated at once. Everyone knows of all the recall issues and how difficult it is to get millions of cars or hundreds of thousands of cars updated. So we need faster and more robust ways to actually update that. So we're thinking, it's looking like over-the-air technology, as cars bring in more wireless technology such as cellular and Wi-Fi, it's possible to update over-the-air. However, that in itself has its own problems. That makes it more vulnerable to, again, because there's more software. It also means that other people can connect to your car. And that's a disconcerting thought to have people connect to your car and sending software to your car. So we have to make sure that, that security is a very important aspect of that process. Because, as we all know, security isn't a perfect science. We all make mistakes as developers in writing our code, no matter how much testing and good practice we have in place. So we have to make sure that we can handle that as much as possible. So just to address that a little further is that since the same kind of technology is in your car, which has been on your network that you're using to listen to this webcast right now, you know, we have network attacks and we'll have, you know, software application attacks. Since you're running mostly software over commoditized hardware in some cases, that will be applicable to millions of cars potentially, depending on what standards and models and makes and that kind of thing. So that's something to keep in mind as well. So this is where I actually start to bang my shoe on the desk. The most important thing is that since we were not going to be able to find everything, we need to look as fast as possible. So that means automation. So if I can look at thousands or millions of lines of code an hour, I can't do that manually. I have to automate that process. So whatever tools you do use, automation is going to be the most key. And then integration is going to follow that. Being able to work with the most numerous amounts of tools is going to be the most flexible tools you're going to use. If your system is comprised of certain build technologies and certain integration technologies and stuff, you want a tool that actually works with those as well as possible to make the seamless integration, you know, headache-free. So in addition to that, we want tools that look for bugs as well as weaknesses in the code. So, for example, fuzzing is a very, very important way to inject faults into the build process. Once the software is in a state where it can be injected, injecting faults into that through fuzzing is a very good way to help automate that process. And then we need to automate the reporting. Yeah, how? So here's an example of where I'm going with this, is that there's some modules or components of your application that are overly complex because of the individual who wrote them or the requirements that surround them, but that is where most likely you're going to have the most code and therefore the least understanding of that code and thus likely the most secure security issues or quality issues. But anyways, that's where most of the mistakes are going to be made. So these need to be pointed out. You're more likely to work in that area than you are into an area that has fewer lines of code, generally because it's bang for the buck. And so that's one of the kind of things that we need to report from a automation point of view. But we'd also like to know, you know, how many weaknesses are we finding? What types are they? What standards do they mesh with? Are they of this type of defect? Are they a critical or low? So reporting is very key because we can't see the actual process run and get the results there. We have to come back with a report on the back end. So solutions to some of these problems that we have or are about to have is we need to build security in. And that's a very important mantra that we talk about. But let me break it down a little bit. If there's 10 companies in a supply chain, every single one of them has to have a posture of security We have to be able to say, yes, my suppliers are secure. Are your suppliers secure? And all the way down the chain. Otherwise, it just takes one weak link in that chain, and then we thus have a huge problem. Ultimately, the end consumer is the one who's going to complain. He's going to complain to the person he bought the vehicle from, and then you're going to have issues there. And it doesn't really matter that it was actually a lug nut supplier that was actually the problem. It's the auto manufacturer that's going to take the real big hit. So that applies the same in source code. So if you use libraries, low-level libraries such as random number generators are important if you're developing cryptographically secure applications. And you might want to do that to keep people out of certain processes within your software stack. So if your random number generator is not sufficiently random, then you may be open to a certain type of attack that allows me to predict, as an attacker, the next key or session or anything else that you're relying on for that, which is a weakness that can be exploited. So in addition to that, it's important that we follow certain standards as well. That allows us to normalize code against a certain security base. So using MISRA, that's a well-known standard within the automotive supply chain. But in addition to that, we're always adding new and interesting stuff to the CVE's list of software vulnerabilities. As we add more stuff to our stack, we're going to overlap into these areas that are not traditionally automotive, especially in areas like the infotainment system, where you're integrating with web browsers and cellular phones and Wi-Fi systems, and used by people who don't have a sophisticated level of computer use in the first place. So, and that goes down to education. It's important that the developers on the team that develop the components that are eventually used by these end users need to realize what impact security has in their lives, as well as what it takes to actually put it into the product. So educating that developer may make the difference between a vulnerability being implemented in code and not. And this finally brings us to clockwork. I like to envision a set of concentric circles as far as security goes. Think of it as defense in depth. But essentially you have an outer ring, and that's your perimeter, and that's usually like a network, or that's where the first level of security is. And then depending on your situation, you'll have each concentric circle might consist of, firewalls and, air gap systems. But ultimately what happens is the final last resort is the actual developer writing code, because that is the application that's going to be exploited. For example, it might be some web technology, or it might be a network component, but it's going to be a piece of software that's going to be exploited. And if you don't have security there, there's nothing left. The attacker has gained access to your data or to that system. And this is where clockwork comes in. Since we are right there at that last line of defense, we can help the developer shore up that defense. We work with many, many different build systems and tools, and such as CI, which is continuous integration. We work with many different standards, like I mentioned before, MISRA, CVE, OWASP. We've even worked with some smaller ones, like the Jet Propulsion Laboratory standards. So, and there's a lot of flexibility there. We deliver different metrics that allow the team to manage their security and to find out how good of a security posture they have, so they know where to start from. They can figure out where to go from here. And then finally, we offer top-notch education that allows the developer to be reminded when they write the code, right as they write it in their environment, that this might be a problem. So we're educating them as they actually are implementing the actual software. So these things allow clockwork to be an excellent provider of security for your car. And I appreciate you listening. And back to you, Kurt.
Thank you very much, Art. Our next speaker is Dr. William White. He is the chief scientist with Security Innovation. He is responsible for the strategy and research behind Security Innovation's activities in vehicular communication security and cryptographic research. He is a chair of the IEEE 1363 Working Group for New Standards in Public Key Cryptography and has served as technical editor of two published IEEE standards. He has designed secure wireless communication standards for a range of settings from ultra-wideband to the United States Department of Transportation's Connected Vehicle Program. Dr. White.
Thank you very much. So what I'm going to be talking about is one specific way in which cars are going to be becoming more connected. So we've had some very good presentations so far, first about practices and processes to use to help automotive equipment become more reliable and secure. Second, about more specific security concerns that generically affect connected automotive equipment. And in my presentation, I'm going to be talking about one specific instance of connected vehicles, which is going to be coming to the market shortly, inside the next 5 years, which is clearly going to increase the exposure of vehicles to the network, and potentially will also save lives, is kind of an interesting case study to illustrate why the processes and practices outlined in the previous two presentations are going to be necessary. A little bit about Security Innovation, very dense slide, I won't go into it in detail, but we've been working in the area of software security for 15 plus years. We've got a blue chip customer base, including Sony, Microsoft, Dell, HP, IBM. We help organizations secure web applications and also secure embedded software. You can see at the bottom we do embedded software security testing, training, and general design for embedded system security. And in this role, in this project, we've been working mainly as security consultants with an expertise in communication security and cryptography. So the starting point for the US DOT Connected Vehicle Program is that there is 3 trillion vehicle miles traveled annually in the US, and there's about 35,000 deaths in 2010 from automobile accidents. That's the leading cause of death for people ages 4 to 34. Automobile accidents in general cost the economy $230 billion a year. And over the last 20 years or so, there's been a lot of work in improving survivability of accidents. So seatbelt laws, airbags, rollover, crumple zones, that kind of thing. But even so, we've got an unacceptably high death rate. And so the focus of the automotive industry and the government has shifted from collision survivability to collision avoidance. And we're seeing this already in high-end cars. You have short-range radar, the Audi advertisements that show the car stopping when a kid runs out into the street. In general, though, those work as low speeds. They follow line of sight. So there's interest in, are there additional technologies we can use that would help us reduce accidents in high-speed cases, which is obviously where accidents are most likely to be fatal, or in cases where we don't have good line of sight. And so for 15 years now, the government's been sponsoring a research program to look at the possibility of putting data connections into cars so that they can continually broadcast, here's my location, here's my velocity, and receiving cars can take that information and using local logic they can predict whether or not a collision is likely to happen and alert the driver. You know, there's been other interesting research showing that 1 second's alert is usually enough, 1 second's additional notice is usually enough to turn a fatal collision into a non-fatal collision. So just giving people that extra amount of warning, that extra amount of heads up, could potentially reduce fatalities significantly. US DOT predicts that this could prevent 80% of unimpaired two-vehicle accidents. So unimpaired means no one's drunk or buzzed. Two-vehicle accidents means, obviously, it won't stop you driving into a lamppost. And then if you have wireless communications on board, that maybe helps with other things. Short-range wireless communications can help you with signal phase and timing from traffic lights. It can help you with green wave coordination, again, with traffic lights. It can help you with platooning, potentially. There's a lot of work going on in the trucking industry looking at having trucks drive close together to reduce air resistance and improve mileage and obviously improve fuel consumption and reduce pollution. There's a lot of interesting uses to this. And after a series of field trials in February this year, NHTSA, which is the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration, announced they're planning to work on a rulemaking that will require the inclusion of this technology in all new light vehicles in a future year, consistent with applicable legal requirements. So it was hedged around with the kind of things you'd expect an announcement of this type to be hedged around with, but the intent is clear. NHTSA wants to mandate this technology for use in all light vehicles, and that mandate will probably take effect sometime between 2020 and 2022. The rulemaking process is a long one. So what does this mean from the point of view of security? Well, there's three considerations. There's general communication security. How do I make sure I'm getting good data? There's concerns about privacy. And finally, there's the interaction with the rest of the car. You know, now we've created another input that can go into the car, and how do we make sure that doesn't affect other systems running on the automotive platform? As far as the risk of false messages goes, as we thought about this, we haven't been as concerned about, you know, somebody sends a false message and that makes you drive off a cliff. That's unlikely to happen. The system is generally designed to look probably be combined with input from other sensors to do automated braking and that kind of thing, but it's extremely unlikely that you'll see these messages used on their own to make driving decisions. So really the risk is just that you get a lot of false warnings and they're annoying and you stop paying attention to them, and then we don't get the safety of life benefits. So we do consider it very important that an incoming message has credibility. So that means you need to be able to detect untrustworthy senders or untrustworthy messages, and you need to let receivers know not to trust them. So you need to authenticate messages, and you need to remove misbehaving devices from the system somehow. Then there's the impact on privacy. Yeah, we don't want – the idea is not that the government gets to track you wherever you go. Although, yeah, maybe it can do that anyway, but the idea is not to give it another way of doing it. And, you know, the auto OEMs are – very conscious of privacy as a concern, yeah, and they're very aware that if this system's mandated to be built into new vehicles and people are worried about privacy, they always have the option of not buying new vehicles, and that's very much not what the automakers want. So there's an alignment of commercial interest and good faith here. So the automakers are working very hard to make it very difficult for the system to be used as a tracking system. So we don't want eavesdroppers or trackers or insiders to collect personally identifiable information. And there's a conflict there with the requirement to remove untrustworthy senders. So you need some kind of tracking for enforcement purposes while making tracking very difficult. And we've got a lot of other design constraints. So using the existing wireless spectrum that's been allocated, we can't have very large messages. We also have cost-sensitive suppliers. If this is going to be mandated, it's going to go into all vehicles, so you're not guaranteed, for example, a data connection for the vehicle. You're not guaranteed a really high-speed processor. This has to be done in a very cost-effective way. So without getting too deep into the details of how we're implementing the security, we're signing messages using elliptic curve cryptography. Elliptic curve cryptography is very popular these days. It's superseding RSA as the public key crypto system of choice due to the fact that it gives you smaller, faster private key operations, much smaller keys and signatures than RSA. So you sign all messages that you send out. Crypto is expensive to do, yeah, and if you're driving along and other cars are sending out 10 messages a second, then you might have 600 or more messages a second coming in. It's not realistic to verify all of those. You can just verify the messages that might make you take action. The certificate that you sign with specifies your permissions but not your identity. That's to avoid tracking. We have a special custom cert format, again, that reduces the overhead. And we have a mechanism to do what's called resolution, where if a certificate is associated with a certain number of instances of sending out false information, then we can take some kind of enforcement action. So, for example, if your car is consistently saying that it's driving one lane to the left, so all the cars who are overtaking it keep on getting forward collision warnings, then you need to be fixed. So there's diagnostics available. Additionally, if somebody extracts the keys from your car and posts them on the internet, we need to be able to say, don't listen to messages signed with this key anymore. So we need to be able to distribute revocation information like in any PKI. We also protect privacy, so there's no personal information in the broadcast messages. The identifiers in the network packets are we're being very clear, say these are what they are. So, for example, your source IP address. If you always send messages from the same source IP address, then somebody who sees a transmission from you in one place and then another place knows they're from the same vehicle because it's the same source IP address. So it's required that all senders change all identifiers network and application level from time to time, and they change them simultaneously. You have a large number of certificates that you can sign with. So from time to time, when you change your other identifiers, you also change your certificate. Again, the idea is if somebody records you in one place and then records you in another place, some time away, some distance away, they can't tell those two messages have come from the same car. So we disrupt any ability to track you, and in particular to do origin destination tracking on you. The SCMS, that's our cert management system, has a number of components as well, and we've designed the information components carefully so that there's no single component inside the SCMS that knows all of the information relevant to a given car. What that means is if there's an insider at the CA or the RA, or if there's a database breach at the CA or the RA, it doesn't matter if one component gets compromised completely. Even so, your privacy is secure. You can't be tracked on the basis of the data from that database. And there's also policy means to protect privacy. So that's out of scope for this presentation, but yeah, it's possible that there could be codes of conduct about how bulk data collection can be managed, bulk data storage. Yeah, clearly, if you're sending out this real-time traffic information, that's going to be of interest to people like Google. Google are probably going to try and collect it in bulk, and we need to make sure that when that collection happens, that data is managed responsibly. So adding the security is also going to increase the overheads of these messages. So the basic safety message is quite small. Crypto adds a lot of overhead. We've tried to keep it down. So the maximum size of a message in this system is going to be about 220 bytes, and 150 bytes of those are going to be the security. These figures are actually slightly out of date. Sorry about that. So you need to be computationally powerful enough to do the signing and verification. You need hardware protection for the private keys. You need accurate local time and position services. And you also need some support on the infrastructure to keep my certs up to date and to issue CRLs. So all of that is still being, the details of how that's going to be implemented are still being teased out in internal projects within the OEMs and in consultation with the Department of Transportation. And those are some issues that need to be sorted out basically in the next year so that the rulemaking can proceed on schedule. So if you're a manufacturer, what questions are you asking? You're saying, well, I want to build equipment that can use this system. How does my device get into the system? So right at the moment, there's a system of certification and qualification testing that's being established by USDOT, and they're aiming to stand up 3 independent test labs over the next 2 years where manufacturers can bring devices and have them tested and make sure they're appropriately performant and secure to get into the system. The exact details of how secure you need to be have not yet been specified. There's clearly going to be some combination of hardware security, probably FIPS 140 level 2, and operating system security to make sure that you can't install rogue applications that, for example, send out advertisements for McDonald's instead of safety messages. So you need to have your device certified. You need to have some bootstrap mechanism whereby you demonstrate to the CAs in the system that you're an approved type of device. And then you go through an authorization process when your device communicates with the various CAs in the system and gets back the cert. And that's all done in a way, again, that preserves the privacy of the device so that nobody in the system can track that device's movements. And then linking it back into the more general theme of this discussion, we have vehicles are becoming networked, and that means that we have a system that needs communication security, which seems solid. It's undergone a lot of review, but there's new entry points into the car, and that has implications for security and the in-vehicle network. You need internal firewalling. You need proper application separation. You need to make sure that you don't give write privileges to processes that should only have read privileges. You need to make sure that only appropriate processes have access to this dedicated safety of life channel and to the keys that sign safety of life messages. And in general, software quality is going to be emerging as a much more important discussion point in automotive over the next few years. The NHTSA, again, the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration, has started a research and education project internally to look at cybersecurity. It is following up on the Toyota unintended acceleration issues that we saw. They're trying to establish if there are codes of practice that they should bring in and mandate, or if the industry can be trusted to self-govern. And so at some point in the future, you may well see regulations that cover, that provide requirements for secure development practices and secure development application certification before code is allowed to be used in an automotive setting. So there's just to note this, as well as developing each piece securely, of course, they need to be integrated securely. Developers will need secure coding training. As others have noted, secure software update is going to be important. We have devices with very long lifetimes. It could be that quantum computing will make elliptic curve crypto obsolete, and then we'll need to migrate to other crypto systems, such as Entru. And what we've seen is that integrating these components has left various gaps. So not just the software developers, but the system integrators are going to need to be aware of secure coding practices. Okay, and that is my presentation. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much, William. We are now to the Q&A portion of the event. Again, we encourage all of you to ask questions of our experts here while you have them available online about anything you've seen today or have other questions you have. Let's start with a round robin question. We'll start with you, William, and then we'll go to Art and then Andreas if you have any comments. In the last few years, security researchers have successfully reverse-engineered firmware from some autos with physical attacks. How about protecting against these kinds of attacks? Are they within the scope of the system security certification, and how do you deal with that kind of thing?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one thing to say is that this whole concept of security certification is very new in the vehicular space. In other settings, people are used to it. In the vehicular space, we still haven't got an unambiguous state of requirements or conformance requirements. And so the testing, so the exact answer to that question is still unclear. In general, when we talk about physical security, of course, somebody who has physical access to your car can cut the brake lines. There's a lot of bad things they can do. So people have tended to consider that you get your physical security from being inside a locked vehicle. However, as you move on to cars that are connected, cars that are expected to send messages. So if I can extract keys from one car, then I might be able to send false messages across the entire country. At that point, physical security becomes more important. And so you will see physical security, I'm pretty certain, you will see physical security figuring into these conformance tests. That exactly what level is going to be required, we don't know yet.
Okay, very good. Art, do you have any commentary on physical security issues and deterrence?
Sure, I do, actually. And William's right that the automotive industry hasn't come to a consensus on how they actually want to do this. I foresee some kind of verification lab similar to some of the insurance related labs and testing that we see. There will be several types, I suspect, that different types of certification the automotive manufacturers will entail. There will be the systems themselves and how they can respond to cyber attacks or more digital types of attacks versus those that, are more physical. So as William kind of alluded to, cutting the brakes with, the brake lines, it used to be you needed a knife and you cut the brake line. Now I can disconnect the ABS system and I no longer have, certain brake functions, so I can disconnect a wire here or I can bypass a wire there. So physical security, while you still need access to the vehicle, it does mean something a little bit different. So I think that needs to be taken into consideration, and you'll start to see some interesting changes on how that actually gets manifested into what we consider safety and certification.
Okay. Andreas, how about you in terms of the physical security and how that plays into the automotive world?
We'll be happy to enforce the appropriate process to ensure the physical security. So some of the, for example, in preparing the hardware component base, that there has to be a certain process that needs to be put in place in the production or packaging of the embedded software into the hardware. We can make sure that the gates are actually provided in order to make sure that that step is being implemented as the product is released.
Okay, I see. And another question for you, Andreas. There's a question about someone having proprietary processes, and if your solution would force them to change their processes to follow yours.
Yes, many of our customers, not only in automotive, but also in mobile handset device and networking equipment, processes is their key differentiator. Fabrication process, the injecting the software into the hardware, and also the software development itself. So this process is actually their intellectual property. So our solution does not force them to change. We embrace their process, and what we do is to make sure that that process disappear into the background so that it's enforcing the process is not becoming a nuisance, but it's more that it's happening in the background and all the gates are properly checked. So,
okay,
I see.
Okay. Art, there's a question about how do you know how secure your code is for software that's already been deployed?
Well, that's a good question on multiple levels. You can never know how secure something is until somebody proves it unsecure. And that's the same for the physical world as it is for the software world. And that being said, it gets even more difficult is that in some cases when you actually ship your code, you deploy it, you have no way of understanding what it is until somebody actually breaks it or tries to dynamically test it. Again, they're only poking from the outside. You can't know how secure your software is unless you actually are looking at the actual code before you deploy it. You can get a level of comfort and ideas of what's out in the industry trying to reverse engineer or to find those bugs, but that's up to the skill of that individual attacking your software wherever it resides. To be able to tell you that, hey, it's good to this point. However, it might be that in a year or two down the line, we've come up with new best practices or best attacks to actually prove it non-secure. So, again, that question is a great question, but you can't really tell until the events actually occur.
Right, okay. Quick question, William, and then we'll go on to another one. What is NTRU?
Good question. Yeah, so NTRU is it's a public key crypto system, so it's similar to Elliptic Curve or RSA. It's developed by security innovation scientists, although it's actually an international standard in IEEE, and it's got a nice property that if quantum computers come along, they'll break RSA, they'll break Elliptic Curve, but they won't break NTRU.
Okay, and there's I think you answered this or came close anyway. Will insiders at a certificate authority be able to track your car the way you were describing things?
No, we've been very careful to split up, say, you need these two pieces of information to track anyone, and this piece is here, and this other piece is over there, and they're two completely separate databases and institutions. So any individual insider can't track you. Obviously, if people get together, then potentially they can, but we think that level of collusion will be able to be detected.
Right. Here's another excellent question. Maybe we can go around the horn, starting with Andreas on this one. What about modular failure relative to a system failure? Like can you cause a system to hang if the brakes go out? Can you do something to potentially a non-important infotainment system that would cause something for a critical system component in the powertrain or something to go out?
The answer is yes, but fortunately today, in order to actually perform that type of hacking, it requires a physical connection to the car system because right now not many cars is actually talking to each other, or you have a very sophisticated radio wave technology that can actually interfere with the system, electronic system in the car. Again, this is definitely a lot of interest in this research because, as William mentioned earlier, that the car will be talking to each other for safety reason. This will open a new Pandora box.
I see. Art?
Actually, yeah, the answer is yes. I was recently at the Black Hat Security Conference, and this was actually covered over certain manufacturers and how their systems are integrated. Some systems are segregated on the actual vehicle, and some are actually connected. So if you can cause one component to DDoS or distributed denial of service or denial of service, the other part of the system, you could send potentially so many messages that they couldn't handle it or some other fault that might exist. They're interacting in a level that could cause a more catastrophic failure than limited to the initial system. For example, sometimes the IV, the infotainment system is connected to maybe the steering or brake system or some other tire pressure system. That's probably not a good design because now there's some potential for crosstalk. You're going to want some of these, you know, blocking mechanisms, these firewalls in between to actually separate these systems so that you can't send messages across. So, I mean, the short answer is yes. The long answer is that there's probably solutions eventually for that.
All right. William, do you have any comment?
Yeah, I prefer to say the short answer is no, but it's a matter of degree. So in principle, it's possible for one component hanging to take down other components. And, you know, that has perhaps been the case in the past, you know, for vehicles that basically haven't been connected, where a physical attack has been the only way in, and if there's a physical attack, then, you know, it doesn't matter that there's also an information technology attack. So I think there's, you know, what you're going to see over time is greater awareness. We're already seeing it among the auto manufacturers of these issues that we've been talking about, like application separation, process separation, proper firewalling, making sure that you have a robust and more modular system than perhaps you did in earlier, more integrated systems.
Okay, very good. Unfortunately, that brings us to the end of the Q&A session. Thank you, Andreas, Art, and William, for sharing your expertise and insights in the auto software security area. We at Open Systems Media, Electric Cloud, Clockwork, and Security Innovation want to thank you, the audience, for attending and contributing excellent questions remotely. Again, we didn't get to all of them, but I'm sure our presenters and or you can reach out to them, and we can cover those other ones as well. This eCast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen within 24 hours, and an audio-only podcast version will also be made available there. You can do a web search with the keywords embedded, space, e-cast, and find all of Open Systems Media eCasts available for download as MP3s. Thank you for attending, and have a great day.